This episode of Football 301, Dane Brugler from The Athletic, the beast himself, joins me to talk about the 2026 NFL draft. We talk about his latest seven-round mock draft, talk about some of the player team fits, get into some my guys. We plant some flags at the end of the show, and we also take a little look ahead at the 2027 draft. Also, I get to sit down with Ohio State wide receiver Carnell Tate for a very fun conversation. Great show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Very, very excited for today's show. A bit of a reunion episode, you could call it that. My former coworker, the beast himself, Dane Brugler from The Athletic, is joining me, a prospects to pros reunion. Dane, I know you're a very big, busy guy, writing up probably 580, 720, tell me when to stop, 960 players, backgrounds, little league stats. I think I saw some Pop Warner stats in there in some of those write-ups. Sure. Oh, yeah, but Dane, the draft expert from The Athletic, here to join me, talk about the draft. How you doing, Dane? Great to see you.
I'm good. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing okay. Right, we were just talking before the show. Is it 2027 yet? Is the next cycle starting? That's kind of how it feels, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, not to definitely listen to the rest of this podcast, but I'm at the point where I'm right. But once I'm to the point where I'm ready to talk about fit and like where these guys end up and, you know, a little bit of a head scratcher, but, oh, I see what they're doing here. Ready for that. But at the same time, I'm looking forward to this conversation because obviously I know how you see football and it'll be a much easier conversation. So
they found our picture from the, looking for a Michael Penix moment. Stuns you. Stuns me.
Your stone face look, it's just unbelievable. That has to go down as one of the, even away from on camera, like just the most shocked I've ever been in a draft.
Ever.
No, I mean, we did not see that coming. And I don't even remember, there weren't a ton of whispers either about that, right?
Nope. I none of that. And they just, so what Dane's referring to right now, if you're watching the YouTube show, you can see a picture of me and Dane from our old draft show with The Athletic. And I had a stunned, like, stopped short reaction when the Falcons drafted Michael Penix at pick 8. No, I think only one person had it. Is it Jonathan Jones from CBS? And he had it as that. Yeah. And I still to this day go, well, I know who you talk to. Because no one else had any inkling about that. So I would say that.
It hadn't hit me yet in that picture.
Yeah.
I was still just like, that doesn't compute. I mean, we both saw Penix similar, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we kind
day
of
two guy.
Yeah. Second round, okay, I get it. But and then it's just the fact that it was not only top 10, but the Falcons who had just obviously signed Kirk Cousins, and it just wasn't something we were expecting. But that's what makes the draft so great. I mean, it is. I mean, we know who the number one pick's going to be this year. We know pick 2 is likely going to be an edge rusher. Pick 3 might be just whoever the Jets don't take, but then pick 4 with the Titans feels like a pivot point. 5 with the Giants feels like a pivot point. The Browns are always in the business of moving around. So do we see a trade at 6? I mean, I do think this top 10, as much as we can say, oh, it's not the same level of talent relative to other top 10s, or, you know, it's a one quarterback class, it's still going to be fun. I think it's going to be an exciting top 10 and first round when we get to draft night.
Well, that's the thing too, with little consensus in this draft. I feel like since I've been at least in media, this is the least amount of consensus I've seen from anybody, even just talking to how people stack positions, how they grade guys. And I keep coming back to that. And I'm sure people that listen to the show get tired of me saying it, but I'm like, I just wait for draft night. I feel like there's going to be stunners left and right, like every couple picks, because we might perceive it as a reach or a fall. And it's like, no, that's the range of these guys. Like, there's players, and we're going to talk about a couple in a sec. Yeah, we're going to preview the draft, by the way. And then I talked to Carnell Tate from Ohio State, the receiver, after for a fun conversation as well. But let's just get into it. Final questions, final predictions, a whole bunch of good stuff. I threw a madman's ramblings at you via email and into our outline here for the producers. And I'm sure everybody's going like, is Nate okay? Because of how my questions were and my notes and everything. But I was like, whatever, here you guys go. But I really do think, and I'm glad you brought up, let's just even start. You did a mock draft, a 7-round mock draft, which is, God bless you. But you did a 7-round mock draft. That's madman stuff. I thought you were just a 2-rounder. I thought you just, have you done 7 rounds?
I always do a 7-round. Yeah. Once I get done with the beast, okay. It's like, all right, congratulations. You got to start working on it. Honestly, it does help me because it really forces me to like look at the needs, look at like trends and like what teams traditionally do. So that's how I choose to look at it, as it's helping me get ready for draft night. But it's an undertaking.
Yeah, you start seeing too, like forces me to look up contracts sometimes, because like I'll just give an example. Like I had Kenyon Sadiq going to the Rams in one mock, and I was like, I could actually argue this better than I thought, because a bunch of the guys all their tight ends are free agents after this year, except for like one guy. So it was like, you know, okay, I can argue. But like I try to take the silver lining when Charles and I are doing our 12th mock draft. That's like, no, this is good homework for me. This is making me do my work and teaching me about exactly what might happen. But I will say, and that's what a few of my questions I even have off of your 7-round mock. And I just kind of want to use that as kind of like to talk about some of these guys and maybe some of the runs on positions. And I think that's what's really interesting is that I think that there's going to be an O-line run, maybe in the late teens, the teens to 20s. But I'm curious if you feel the same way. Are there other runs at these positions that you maybe feel? I mean, there's edges galore on day 2, especially. But one of those guys might go early and it might start a whole new run. There might be a defensive tackle run. There might be a corner run. There might be a receiver run. But what kind of positions do you think are stack up well or are set up for maybe a run happening either round 1 or into day 2?
I think you're right. I think offensive tackle, we're going to see a lot of those guys fly off the board. Probably, 7 tackles go in the first round? And I think a big part of that, too, is just that second tier of tackles is underwhelming. And, like, if you don't get your tackle in the first round, there are a few options later on, but I don't think you have a ton of confidence, especially if you're looking for somebody that's going to help you in year 1. So these tackles are going to go pretty quickly. I think wide receiver, receiver is a deeper position where there's guys in day 2, even into day 3 that can help a team. But I think these first round guys, we're going to see a run, and it'll be interesting to see which one run we see first. Could we see 4 receivers go in the top 16? It's certainly possible. And, you know, I think Cleveland sitting there at 24, if they go offensive line at 6, they feel like there'll be a receiver there at 24. But I think there should be at least one of those 6 that you could still take at 24 and feel good about it. But it might be a little more dicey than some mock drafts, which leads you to believe, if we see that wide receiver run start early.
Yeah, and that's the game. I feel like they have more teams. It's pretty clean, always mocking them. It's like receiver, tackle, and just in some variation of it. You, along with a few others, got a little interesting in your last mock. You had the trade happening where they moved back and with the Cowboys. And it seems like everybody got the memo maybe on the Cowboys about maybe moving up and maybe moving up for Sonny Styles. But maybe outside of the Cowboys, or including the Cowboys, maybe are they going to be that aggressive, or is that just maybe, hey, I'm kind of having fun with this? Or do you see that way? Or are there other maybe little surprise trades or surprise trade candidates? Maybe a player that you've kind of heard that like, hey, a lot of teams like this guy, they might bump up for him.
Yeah, obviously the Cowboys aren't going to tell me what they're going to do. But talking to other teams, and they think the Cowboys are going to be aggressive, having 2 first-round picks. I don't think that the Cowboys are going to do like a 2-for-1 deal where, okay, they're going to trade 12 and 20 for 3 or anything like that. Then that's why the Browns trade makes sense, because you are trading 12 and 20 for 6 and 39. And the Cowboys don't have a second round pick. So this enables you to get back into the second round. And let's be honest, the player at 20 is probably not that different grade wise with who you're going to get at 39. So, you're taking a little bit of a discount there, but you're also getting a premier player in this draft that, instead of staying put at 12, you can go be aggressive and get your guy. This is going to be a defensive draft for the Cowboys. Christian Parker is he's a kid in the toy store, and he's kind of, you know, he's got his wish list, and now it's up to Will McClay and the Jones family to go make that happen. And it's just going to be interesting to see how the Cowboys navigate this. It's very likely they stay put at 12 and 20. It'll just be interesting if they get wiped out with, say, Sonny Styles is gone, Caleb Downs is gone, Reuben Bain is gone, which I think it's very likely that happens, especially with the Chiefs at 29. Throw Mansour Delane in there as well. The Bengals at 10. Like, there are several teams picking right in front of Dallas that could snipe those players. So if they do get wiped out, I think it'll get interesting about what's their plan B. How do they feel about Keldrick Falk that early? How do they feel about Dylan Thienemann that early? So things will get really interesting with Dallas if they stay put.
Yeah, no, and you even mentioned Bane with the Chiefs and everything, and I think even with the Bane news that's come out, I don't even want to get into that, but my thing with the NFL, too, is where his range is, where I thought his range was, are a bunch of teams that don't really care for character, and that's why I haven't been really thinking, that's Chiefs included here, Cowboys included here, Bengals included here, a lot of teams that really just kind of wave that kind of away, so, but you mentioned one guy there, Dylan Thienemann from Oregon, safety. On top of Caleb Downs, on top of Emmanuel McNeil Warren from Toledo, who I do like as well, do you see all three ended up in the first round? I know you have that mocked, but are you anticipating all three ending up in the first round?
Yes, I think all three end up in the first round.
Okay. I think that's how
majority of teams feel too. Just talking, going through. So like, I don't do a mock without going through it with a team or two and just going, okay, this is what I'm thinking here. This is what I'm thinking there. I don't do the whole seven rounds, but the first round and part of the second round I will do. And just to get their feel for, no, that would surprise me. Or yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Could see it happening. Or in some cases it's like, yep, that's exactly what I've heard is going to happen. So I think that with the safeties, those three, they are all three expected to go in the first round. Now we'll see if it happens. Some teams are just anti draft safety in the first round. And, but you mentioned it earlier, just how maybe some stunners in this class, I think, especially when we get to that back half, like those playoff teams, because just the names are in that tier, like again, between 20 and say 60, they're all graded pretty similar. Right. So it's just if Trayden Stukes goes in the first round, I don't think it'd be that shocking. Or I don't know. I'm trying to think of a name that would really surprise, like Jennings Dunker, or, you know, just names that I know like teams like, and I don't expect them to go in the first round. But just knowing how that teams like them, I don't think it'd be a huge shocker if that's how it ended up.
Yeah, I'll get into one guy even that you, to me, I have this great, but this is actually speaking to what you're, I totally agree. I feel like players 24 to like 58 on my big board are basically the same grade, which I wish I was exaggerating that, but that's kind of, it's a weird thing, but that I actually like a lot of day two guys in this draft. It's just, it's almost like I'm sure every team was wish their setup almost this year, like the Jacks. Hey, yeah, we don't have a first rounder. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The Travis Hunter thing. Look how many day two picks we got. Like, let's just cook with these and day three. But like, that's kind of what this draft is. Cause I feel like some of these guys can actually end up out kicking their placement or their draft position just because there's such a muck in the middle. But you had Malachi Lawrence at 26 going to the Bills. That this kind of, I'll maybe get into this group of edges. I'll consider maybe the tier two edges is maybe the best way I can put it. And Lawrence is part of one of that group, but I'm considering like Cassius Howell, R. Mason Thomas, Gabe Yakis, the Silent J, Danny Dennis Sutton from Penn State, Kenyon Crawford from Auburn, who I really like, by the way. Romello, yeah, I think we have him actually near each other. I had him at 51, I think. Romello Height a little later is a round three guy, the Michigan duo, Barham, Moore. And then on top, maybe the guys that are like the one and a half tier, Zion Young, TJ Parker, you know, kind of depending on who you talk to, of course, or how you grade these guys. That's the position that I'm like, it was very hard for me to parse through because there's so many flavors. But is that kind of how that's one of those positions where you might see some maybe quote unquote shockers? Like I like Lawrence in the first round is a little rich for me, but I have seen teams like him. And so I wouldn't be shocked if he goes up 26, but that's kind of a guy where you're referring to maybe that kind of edge group, maybe how you parse them, or maybe their other positions maybe stacked up that way.
Well, and it's kind of like how we talk about receivers, right? Where Denzel Boston and Deion Burks being in the same category as players because they played the quote unquote same position, you know, it's just wildly different. And it's kind of the same with some of these pass rushers where what Malachi Lawrence offers you is different than what Cassius Howell offers you, which is different than what Zion Young brings to your team. And so fit, schematic fit, and just play style, I think matters a whole bunch when we talk about these this range of the draft, that late second, early first, or late first, early second, especially with these pass rushers. So like that's why I like that fit with Buffalo because it's kind of like that the type they're missing. You know, they usually draft the AJ Epinesas, the 270 plus pound power guys. Give them an explosive linear edge rusher who is more the 255 pound range, but that burst off the ball and his ability to just explode to the quarterback is just a little bit different than what they've drafted in the past. And so I like that fit. But yeah, I mean, if you miss out on, say, Zion Young, is your next option going right to like an R. Mason Thomas? Or is it, it's really interesting how these teams are going to stack these edge rushers because they're all a little bit different. And like receivers, it comes down to the flavor and what exactly you're looking for, which it makes it tough to stack when you're us, right? When you're on the outside looking in and you're trying to, you know, we don't have a scheme where we're scouting for. We don't have a defensive coordinator or defensive staff that tells us what they like and what they want. We're doing this from a very generic perspective. And so it makes it tough a little bit when you're just kind of choosing who we like. But and that's why the order we have these edge rushers might not be the order they actually come off the board.
And that's that was what's so hard is how I grade the guys. It's like, well, I like this guy better, but to me, he's a DPR. But, you know, like say like R. Mason Thomas for me, that's a DPR. Okay. He's not awful against the run, but you know how I prefer him. All right. How do I grade that? And Gabe Yakis, who is not a DPR. He's as Derek Klassen, your coworker says, he plays like he's made of rocks and he means that as a compliment and derogatory, but that's, I have those two in the same tier. They couldn't be more wildly different players. And so it's like, for even me parsing it, it's like, I know Sacks are the name of the game, but this guy will play more snaps. And like that little group, like really gave me a headache because it's like, I like them. I don't love any of them. I like them, but also their roles are very going to be team specific. So I'm glad you kind of compared them to receivers too, because that's very much I think the same
for you.
For me,
is he a DPR for you?
Yeah, it's, there's some aspects I like. I did warm up to him at the end, but he's late. I had him kind of this whole group between 45 and like 58 on my board, and Howell was kind of the tail end of that. I did think some of the how he can't, I mean, the arm length showed up in his film. I really do think he couldn't disengage as much as I wanted, as much as I liked the flash plays and how speedy he was and how quick he was. And those players are tough for me because I see the appeal. But it's if they don't win instantly, they're dead. And that's those guys I only can get so high on. So even if I don't think they're a total slouch against the run, that's just a DPR to me, like how I grade those guys. It's just kind of a dogma kind of thing, unless they're, you know, superhero, you know, like that's kind of the thing, you know, unless it's like, oh my God, I know this guy's not great, you know, David Bailey. Oh, I know this guy's not great against the run, but oh my goodness, look at him go, you know, and he's kind of, that's what he, and sorry, reverting this all back, but like Bailey coming from Stanford, he basically was a DPR. And then Texas Tech was like, that was it. And I liked him, but it was like, and he just, of course, had a great year. But then Texas Tech goes, well, we're paying you this money, so you're seeing the field every single snap. Like,
he was, you better be out there. I think that gives you optimism that, because he's never going to be a plus-plus run defender, but can you be serviceable? No. And that's all you need.
Just has to be okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for much of the season, he was in the run game. Now, obviously, there's a big jump between the Big 12 and what he's going to see in the NFL. But if you can, I think there's he took enough of a jump this past year from 2024 to 2025, where 2024, they barely even trusted him to be out there on early downs.
Yep.
I think that's enough, gives you enough optimism that he's trending in the right direction. And yeah, you're drafting him where you're drafting him and paying him what you're paying him for the pass rush juice. But I think you feel a little more confidence that he can just at least hold up on the edges.
Agreed. he has the want to. Like, that's what kind of kept me from like really dinging him. It's like, no, the guy's trying. It's like, sometimes he just can't. He just can't hold up right now like that. But that's half the battle kind of thing. Like, it's like, all right, at least he's trying and not just going, oh, it's a run play. And just getting, you know, thrown out the club kind of thing and just like trying to eat it. All right, let's move off the edges real quick because, I don't know, I do think this edge class is fascinating. I do want to give Crawford another shout out because how twitchy he was is so much fun, dropping into coverage, all that stuff. But anyways,
Jermaine McCoy. Are both,
oh, I'm sorry.
You and I are both are Keldrick Falk guys. Like we both like Keldrick Falk. But yeah, Falk. I think you watch that Auburn defensive line for Falk, but you come away talking about number 24 because – man, he's just fun. Like I had so many issues with watching that defense and just what they were asked to do. I don't know why they didn't let 24 rush more and more and more because he's a fun player. And we don't have any testing information from him, unfortunately, that combine or pro day, but I think he would have killed it.
I think so too. He is that twitch I really like. Like, it's just like, that's the real disruptive twitch, like a fireball twitch. It's the bend, the... even if he's not the biggest, like on contact, he has enough pop because of his twitch that he can move a guy and can readjust off of that. I agree with you. It was kind of one of those things where it's nice that I got to see him drop in coverage and actually pretty dang good at it. But also just pull the bow back and let it go. Like, let's let this arrow go a couple times. Same with Keldrick Falk. Like, it's an appeal that he can move inside and can two gap sometimes and shoot, you know, shoot the gap other times, or I should say just rush the passer other times. But sometimes I just want to see you go. I just want to see you go and just get upfield and see. And this is kind of related to Christian Miller from Georgia. It's like the same thing whenever you watch Georgia's defense, you're like, oh my God, just rush up the field. Stop rotating the guys and just rush up the field so I could just see him go.
so frustrating.
It's so frustrating. That's Dominique Orange from Iowa State. All right, here's another looper. Here's another game. Like, no, I just want to see this guy two gap.
Tyler Onyedum, one of my favorite day two players, defensive tackle from Texas A&M. That's why he transferred from Iowa State to A&M. He was tired of being in that three-man front where he's taking on blocks and spilling production to teammates. And he wanted to be in more of a four-man attacking front. And I think it worked out for him because I think he's going to be a day two pick.
Great up. Yeah, no, I it's one of those things we're watching a lot of these guys one after another. It's like, I get why Iowa State does that, but when I'm trying to, and Georgia, I'm a little more mad at because I'm convinced they just do that just so they can show off at coaching clinics. But I do think that, like, when I watch Iowa State, I'm just like, I get why you guys do this, but can I just see him rush? Can I just see him get upfield? Because the little glimpses are cool. Let's move off the ball a little bit. Jermaine McCoy, corner from Tennessee, who. You had him going to the Vikings at 18. Mike Zimmer, still the head coach of the Vikings. but he is talented as all get out. I loved every time I was like starting to like kind of drop him. I go peek a game of 2024 and I go, oh yeah, this is the guy.
No injury. What I think do you have him? If no injury, durability is perfect.
Six? Like top eight, I'd say. You know, like, very comfortably in the top 10, like easily. Yeah. I think I put him at 15, my final ranking. And I said, I go, I'm kind of splitting the difference here. Like, the injury concerns and other stuff want me to drop him in the 20s, but I see his ability and it's like, oh no, this is lockdown high end corner play, which you take all the time, especially with the size and everything. So where are teams at with him? I know you kind of, him and maybe Jordan Tyson, because I have those two kind of grouped together. I see the talent. The injury stuff is a little, you know, it's gonna worry some teams. But how are they feeling about those two right now?
It's always the toughest because obviously I can't do, you know, my job without talking to teams and getting a sense for how they feel about some players. And like with McCoy, he's one of the wild cards of the first round, plain and simple. Because 2024 tape says he's a top 10 pick. He's one of the better players in this draft. Some teams are out on him because of the knee. And I'm not sure how that's going to play out because some teams are going to be in, but which teams? And do they feel comfortable drafting him where they are? I'm not sure how that one's going to play out. I say he could go 10 to the Bengals. He could be on the board in the 20s and neither would be surprising. if it played out that way.
Yeah.
So I think when you talk about the true wild cards of round one, Jermaine McCoy is one of them. I think Caden Proctor is one of them. Ty Simpson, obviously. Mm-hmm. Keldrick Falk. Guys that just feel like they have a wide range of realistic outcomes, where if they go at 10, 11, 12, I get it. I understand why that happened. If they fall to the 20s, I also understand that as well. I think Jordan Tyson falls more in the, I think he's going to go high. I think he's going to go in the top 16. He could potentially even, let's say that Carnell Tate goes 6. I don't think it's crazy that Jordan Tyson goes 8. The Saints need wide receiver help in a big, big way. And if, just say Carnell Tate's their top guy, he's off the board. Jordan Tyson, you do worry about the durability factor, but I don't know. He was my top receiver coming into this season. And so I think talent-wise, I see Stephon Diggs, a guy that can create his own separation. He can win at the catch point. There's just a lot to like about him. And so Tyson will be tough. He's working out tomorrow. He's not doing any testing for teams, okay, but he's going to run routes. And hey, it's something. I think that'll help teams. We saw him out there running around. He looked good. Yeah. And I'm sure he'll probably be running 85%, at least it's something. And I think he ends up somewhere top 16, whether that's, the Saints, the Chiefs, the Rams, the Jets at 16. Mm-hmm. I think one of those spots would make sense.
He was one of my hardest ones to find, get a landing spot on, as far as just on my board, and just really to grade these receivers. Sure. I have trouble with sometimes. I see the talent, I see the twitch, I see that, I see the ball skills, and it's just like, yeah, but then he's very loose with the routes, it kind of be a little doesn't really get the depth all the time. I was talking about this Matt Harmon earlier this week, and it's like, oh man. And so these guys I always have trouble with, because it's like, all right, then you just need to get with you a few more times. Is that a feature or a bug? Maybe is the best way to put it. Is that just an appeal of how you play, or is this something that's going to really hurt us down the road and the NFL quarterbacks are going to hate it? It could be both. So that's always one. He was one of my tougher ones to kind of grade out and kind of figure out. I ended up still liking him. I think I had him top 20 on my board. Yeah. And everything, but also the medical concerns and everything as well. No, I was just curious. I'm very, you mentioned, I had these receivers, even when trying to stack them, it wasn't a ton of separation. I really liked, Tate and everything. And I like Boston, of course, which I'm sure it's not shocking to you. But guys like Tyson and Concepcion, Lemon, Omar Cooper, the consensus top 6. It's I like all these guys. None of them are those high-end prospects to me, but there's a lot of good here. But when you get to that good range, which is this whole draft, then it becomes more flavors, which I think is kind of – I'm trying to tie a bow on kind of maybe your point there. But I want to talk to you about two defensive tackles, volatile defensive tackles. You got Peter Woods. You had him going 41 to the Bengals, Peter Woods from Clemson, and then Caleb Banks from Florida, going 44 to the Jets. Both are very talented guys. Woods was my number one player going into the season and has been just dropping since then. Just a slow, steady decline since then. I still kept him in my top 30 because I just see the quickness. I see the talent and everything, even if there's some frustration. What do teams think of Woods? Because I did think what doesn't help him is Clemson was losing. Clemson had national championship aspirations, was definitely not that this year. And meanwhile, his teammate TJ Parker is still doing his job and kicking butt.
Yes.
So why? Yeah. So what? How do teams kind of think of Woods? And then we can get kind of the Banks and maybe how they think of him as well.
Even though Parker had a disappointing season compared to expectations and what we, based on what he did as a sophomore, you throw on the South Carolina tape, one of the last games of the year, and he's recovering a fumble 30 yards down the field. Yep. And it's like, okay, this guy's still just busting his butt and hustling. Where I'm not going to say that, and I'm not, I don't think you're saying it either. Like Peter Woods, stopped playing, or effort stopped, but he just didn't play to the same level. He just plain and simple. He had 14 pressures this year, 14, and it's like, all right,
that's supposed to be his
coming into the year. I saw a good player, and I graded you high because I expected you also to take that next step as a junior. Great. He didn't take that next step. He also didn't look like the same player in 2024. He looked like a lesser player than that, and I don't know what to do with Peter Woods. He's one of the tougher guys in this draft, because if you grade to the flashes, I get it. I get why a team like, say, the Bears at 25 might consider him, or, you know, even higher than that, maybe potentially in the 20 range. But it's just, again, the testing isn't there. The tape isn't there from 2025. The body of work isn't what you want. Now, maybe it does help him that this is not a very good defensive tackle class, and those guys are going to go. Do we see a defensive tackle in the first round?
McDonald, maybe?
I don't.
That's kind of the maybe one Cade guy.
Maybe McDonald would go. Maybe Peter Woods would go.
Because he is the one that has like universal appeal, but from everybody. Like, he doesn't seem to have as many detractors, but maybe not so many people. And I'm including my own grade on him. Maybe the guys that don't overly love him. But even when I talked to some teams, everyone kind of like, he was the consensus like. Like, you know, almost like Tate is kind of like that for receivers. Like, it's like all the other guys have a little bit more issues. It's like, yeah, Tate's the cleanest. Okay, so well, he's one, I guess. Like, that's kind of McDonald for me. It's like, I like him a lot, but it's not the crazy D-tackle prospect I've ever seen. Like, I've seen some better ones maybe in recent years, but I like him. And I think he's kind of de facto that.
That makes sense. Because, he's obviously an outstanding run defender. Watch the Big Ten championship game, and Styles was awesome. The whole defense was awesome. I mean, held Indiana to 13 points.
He gets in on so many tackles. It's crazy for a nose.
For a first-year starter, kind of his, too.
That's notable.
For sure. And that's why I think he has a chance to get in there. The two guys you mentioned, it's definitely – there's definitely risk involved with both these guys. And Banks, it's more durability-wise. Banks obviously is a physical phenom. 6'6", 335 pounds, 35-inch arms, 11-inch hands. You know, it's just hard to find guys that look and move like he does. But, you know, he missed most of 2025 with the foot injury. Then he breaks the same foot, but a different part of the foot the night before the combine, still goes out and works out until he realizes, hey, something's not right, and misses, you know, a good chunk of the process because of that. It's not a talent issue. It's just more of, can you be on the field long enough to develop and make the impact we think you're capable of with Banks? And so he goes somewhere in the second round, but there's definitely a ton of risk attached to him.
Yeah. If he ends up kind of in where he ends up being the most dynamic disruptor, D tackle, whatever you want to call it, of this class, would not be shocked. Like, Charles McDonald and I were talking about him. We're trying to, you mentioned it, it's hard to find just what that looks like and actually knows how to use it. And the guy I came to historically was Marcus Stroud, the old D tackle from the Jags, because it was just, that was such a big 6'6", 320 pounder, giant behemoth hands, you know, long arms. When you mentioned the health stuff, you know, with the feet, and you if you don't know anything, you don't have to say it or anything, but if was there anything with like concerns with his work ethic or anything like that? I don't know anything. I'm just asking, like openly asking, because I'm wondering, is it just the health stuff that dings him, or is there anything else with him, work ethic or anything like that? Because he's so talented, I want to love him.
Right. Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, I think that he's a young kid, but like a good kid. Yeah. Like, he's maybe a little naive to some things, but not in a destructive way or something that you worry about. It's more just, you know, you got to keep tabs on him, make, you know, just,
yep, okay,
but not something you're going to worry about. It kind of reminded me of, remember Vernon Butler, who the Panthers drafted in the first round coming out of Louisiana Tech, 2016, maybe. I don't know, but he was that big, just has the tools, has the traits. It's just, we got to make him a better football player, a more consistent football player. And they, you know, wasn't able to do that, but that's a guy that went in the first round because of those. It's hard to find guys that look and move like that.
Yep. I feel like the Senior Bowl week really helped him, because even whatever that is, you know, narratively, whatever, it's like he went out there, even with foot stuff and all that, and kind of just checked the box. And I think, like you said, some people just need to see that. Yeah. And some people need to see that. It's like, well, this guy's a freak. Oh, he's out here working too. Okay. Didn't miss anything. All right. It sounds silly at times, but it depends on the player. For a guy like this, that's a big check, a box to check, at least for him. Other guys, it's like, all right, whatever. But for him, that was, I think, a good thing to at least to see for me. Let's hear some of your guys, Dane. But maybe three, four, five. You could go one per position, however we want to go with this. What are some of your guys? It doesn't have to be a first rounder. It can be. You could be Fernando Mendoza as one of your guys. I don't care. It's just whatever. Who is some of just the guys that you really took a liking to and you're excited to see where their kind of landing spot is going to be?
No, Mendoza's your guy. I can't steal him. But kudos to you. Again, I've told you this offline and now online, just how you were higher on him. And I always liked him, but I never quite got as high as you.
You had him as a first rounder. You had him as a first rounder. I remember your mock last summer.
I thought
summer.
He was a future NFL starter. I think in my top 50 in August, he was like 19. So like I was there. I never quite liked him as much as you did. You had more faith than I did, and credit to you, because that man did that pay off in a big way. Mendoza's just
broken clock.
It's easy for the Raiders this year to know who they're taking at one. One of my guys that I really liked throughout the process, starting in September, was Chris Johnson, the corner out of San Diego State. Smooth, big. I mean, he's over 6 foot. Not big in the sense that like his build, like he's a little slender, but one of the big questions, like his coverage ability, you throw on the Cal tape, every tape he's making plays, sometimes out of the slot, sometimes on the outside. The big question was going to be, is he fast enough? That's what I kept hearing from scouts. Like, why am I so high on this guy? And I'm not, it just doesn't feel like the buzz is, I'm hearing is the same. And he's like, he's not going to run great. He's going to be a 4.55 guy. And I was like, he looks okay.
Pretty
he looks,
smooth to me.
Yeah, it looks pretty switchy, pretty fast. And then he runs a 4.40 at the combine. And now I think that was the last thing for scouts. That was like, all right, never mind. The last thing we were worried about, check that box. And so Chris Johnson went from day two pick to, okay, now why shouldn't he be a top five corner? And so he's my third corner. Just a big fan of his and what he can do, and great kid too. After I got done watching his film, I got on the phone with him in September, and one of the nicest guys I've talked to during this process. He's young for his grade because he has a twin sister and they skip kindergarten. So he's still just 21 years old, even though he's a 4-year senior, just a really good player and somebody that I'm glad to see is finally getting talked about as a potential top 25 pick in this draft. So that would qualify for one of my guys. Someone more off the radar, Riley Nowakowski, do everything tight end. And this is a deep tight end class where it might be hard to have a favorite because there's so many of these guys. Like I really like Will Kaczmarek. We both like Texas A&M. I think, Notre Dame, Eli Raritan is somebody that is maybe being slept on a little bit, but with Nowakowski, he's just somebody that's going to play in the league for the next 10 years because he's so useful. Whether you're using him as a blocker, as a short underneath target, they gave him goal line carries as a fullback.
I know.
Former walk-on, like there's just so much to like about the player, and not somebody that I would take in the third round necessarily, but anywhere on day three, I'd feel comfortable at drafting him and knowing exactly what I'm getting.
It's not the same player one-to-one, but where did Juszczyk go? Fourth round?
Gosh, that sounds right.
That sounds right, right? Okay, but that's the role I see for him. Juszczyk is kind of a one-to-one player, but just fourth to round, do everything. Fourth round? I'd be very comfortable.
Yeah, 130th overall. Good call.
Yep, I'd be very – that's exactly the range, I feel like, for Riley. He, former Badger. Yeah.
From a linebacker for the really Badgers.
Yes. They couldn't
they didn't know how
they
to use
knew
them.
They liked him. They just couldn't figure out how to use him. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And he's a football player. But it's like, man, he gets the ball in his hands. It's like an elephant in the safari, like with a bunch of lions jumping on him. And he's just run. Yeah. I think it was Penn State he had a catch that is coming to mind where it's like he caught a crosser or a flat and it was like it was a long third and 10 check down and he gets the first because he just he had one, I think, in the Big Ten championship game the same way. He's a good blocker in line, like shockingly, what his build is. Like, I wouldn't want him to live that way, but it's not a bad thing. Like, that, hey, you can actually hold up maybe as a wing. But yeah, he's kind of just that you know, the guys in this role right now in the NFL, it's like Reggie Gilliam, Alec Ingold, Juszczyk, guys that kind of just do a little bit of everything. And, you know, I kind of think he is that. I agree with you. I'm glad you gave him a shout out because he's just a cool football player. Do you have one or two more? Also, by the way, your Johnson tout. You just, thank you for the shout out about Mendoza. Johnson, I'll give you the shout out because you popped him up and I was like, oh, I got to check him out because I was just starting to watch corners and DBs and kind of really hone in. I was like, all right, Dane is pretty dang good with the DB stuff. So if you get a, you're going to tout a corner that's maybe off the radar, I'm going to follow here. And I watched him. I was, and that you said the line, but that's my write up too, was smooth. Like, just like, I don't know. It's not twitchiness. It's more body control in zone and stuff, like how he knows how to kind of high low stuff. That's what really appealed to me. So that, I love that little shout out there. But maybe one or two more little my guys that you got, Dane.
Well, we mentioned Kieron Crawford, so I won't bring him up again.
I'm glad we got to talk about him.
Yeah, for sure.
He was one of my last guys I watched. Like, he was fun as hell.
Markell Bell, the offensive tackle from Miami.
Yeah,
he's somebody that obviously just a mammoth human being. 6'9", the wingspan's 87 inches. Obviously Francis Maui Noah gets most of the attention and deservedly so. He played outstanding at right tackle for Miami, but Markell Bell was just as impressive at left tackle throughout the season and then into the playoffs. He was a big reason for their success up front. And yeah, he's big, and there's some times where yeah, he struggles to redirect. And but it's almost like the DeJuan Jones when he was coming out of Ohio State, where he's massive, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm, can he move well enough? And I think there's some of those questions there. And Markell Bell to me is more of a late third, early fourth. Like after we get past that first tier of offensive tackles, like I like Caleb Tiernan in on day two, but the next tier is not very. It's not very fruitful. There's not a ton of tackles that I think you feel great about. Markell Bell is one of the few that I would love to bring, you know, draft him at 102, bring him into my program. I think we might have a starter at some point down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Like nice about, little kind of red shirt backup. Travis Burke is probably the other guy in that tier too from Memphis. Yes. The other kind of tackle. Yes. He grew up.
He's
me a
been
lot.
Popular. The process.
Has he?
Eight visits, I think, top 30 visits. A lot of workouts, a lot of, yeah, he's been somebody that's been teams like, I mean, I think the play personality, the way that he finishes this at that, especially at that size, the way he can move.
Light
and
feet.
Teams are just trying to figure out more because it's like, all right, we like him. Our coaches like him. Let's make sure we're doing our due diligence. Let's bring him in. Let him lower his guard and then we can really attack him. That's what teams love to do in those 30 visits.
Yeah, right. They put you through the gauntlet. That was one of my jobs with the Falcons, was I had to organize a schedule for everybody. And it's truly a gauntlet. It's like speed dating. It's like, all right, 15 minutes with the college director, 15 minutes with the GM, mm-hmm, 15 minutes with the head coach, 15 minutes with your position coach. Like, and just one after another, another, another. Hey, what'd you get out of him? What'd you get out of him? Those kind of two tackles, those kind of behemoths. Like, yeah, Burke's the guy I regret not having my dad watch when we did our little O-line show, because it was like, I actually wanted his thoughts on him because I thought he was okay. If you're this big and because he went Gardner Webb to FIU to Memphis, I believe. If you're that big, why are you going from Gardner Webb to FIU to Memphis? Like, you know, I know that sounds simplistic scouting, but there's sometimes that's like a little warning bell for me. And I watched him. I was like, oh no, this guy's got great body control. Like it's actually like a little more athletic than I figured for such a behemoth guy. So I kind of wanted to ask about him as well. I also want to ask you about one of my guys, and you actually just hinted about him, Eli Raridan. What am I missing?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't decide if I have him or Eli Stowers as tight end two or tight end three. Like they're right next to each other on my big board. It depends on what team is drafting them. Stowers really grew on me. Like I was like, I wanted to hate him and be like, no, this guy stinks. Like he's just an athlete. Right. Then I watched him. I'm like, no, you're a great athlete. Like you're better than Mike Gesicki. And Mike Gesicki went in the second round. Like, you know, all right. And you can hang out, even though I called him a Tino, tight end in name only.
There you go.
because he's basically a power slot. But he's athletic enough to actually do it. So I kind of like liked him. But Raridan, so the Elis, Raridan from Notre Dame, has the two ACLs, then plays, got inline ability. I might be one of the higher guys on him. Is there something I'm missing on top of the ACLs or anything like that? So you kind of mentioned it was a potential sleeper as well.
I mean, he might be the poster boy for, you know, trace over production, right? For this, this class, because he has, I think, three total touchdowns in college and none of them came as a senior, which was his most productive year catching the ball. But I think when you don't look at the stat sheet and just look at the body of work, of his targets. And I mean, I get why you'd have some optimism about, okay, this translates. Like, yeah, he's this big guy. He's got linear twitch. He can make athletic adjustments on the football. Like, I mean, if the ball's on his back shoulder, he can go get it. So I think that what he does at the catch point, just having the length and the wingspan and being able to finish in traffic, that stands out. But then also just the athlete. And I think that shows up both as a receiver and a blocker, where he's not a slouch as a blocker. Like, obviously, I think you're drafting him for more what he does or his potential as a pass catcher. But I mean, he does some good things in the blocking game as well, especially as like a wham blocker. I think that was what stood out the most for me. But I'm glad you mentioned him. Like, I didn't know what to do with him. I threw him in the fourth round, but I did really like him as a somebody that is. All right, why couldn't Notre Dame get more out of you? Because you're a good player.
And you've been around, like, it seems like good working, all that. I totally agree with that. I get Riley Leonard maybe not targeting that position too much, but maybe, you know, CJ Carr throwing the ball. The O-line was pretty good this year, so they had time. I was curious about that too, but he won me over because the inline ability. He's my Tucker Kraft for this draft. Like, if
high praise.
Outperform it. It's the skill set of a true Y, and it's like, that's why I'm gonna bet on that. Like, but that's what's cool. There's a lot of Ys in this class. Like, there's a good amount, which is actually really fun, especially what you mentioned, kind of round three-ish into round four. Like, the tight end flavors are really fun. Not just a bunch of receiver only types.
Yeah, for sure. I think maybe the reason I dinged Raritan was just because he made me feel old because his dad blocked for Brady Quinn at Notre Dame.
Just like Brady Quinn.
That was like five years ago, right? Like, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? Right?
That hurt.
I know.
Yeah. I just saw AJ Hawk's sister or Brady Quinn's sister with the dual jersey at the Fiesta Bowl. Like, it was like, as soon as I see Brady Quinn, I just get that picture of the jersey at the Fiesta Bowl. I just had to ask about him. The other guy I was going to ask, but I want to get to the other questions. Dazon Stribling. I think we both like him a lot. That was he really grew on me, man. Like, that was, he's got a lot to him. He was decently productive as well at several stops. He can go, probably the best blocking receiver in this class. If not, he's on the podium, and he can go and he catches the ball and he seems smart. He moves all over I don't know. That was the guy I'm like, yeah, I'm buying you.
Background, 50 or so. He's an interesting guy, and somebody that, like, you ask a scout in November, I think they're probably telling you fourth round pick, but it's just the way he played in the college football playoffs through January. And then what he did at the combine, obviously running a 4.36 and the 40-yard dash at 6.2, 207. He just crushed every point of the process. And I mean, he's to the point where he's turning down visits because he's running out of time. And there's only so many minutes in the day. And so, but he's been a really popular guy with teams throughout this last few weeks.
I can see that. I can see receiver coaches really liking him. All right, we'll get two last little questions here. One to kind of put a capper on this draft class, and then maybe a little eyes ahead. What's your kind of last little flag plant or a bold prediction, however you want to take it, with 1 week to go before this draft? Do you have a player that you want to, or a take that you just want? Maybe you haven't gotten off your chest. Maybe you want to reiterate. You've gotten a lot off your chest the last month or two. So maybe you haven't gotten it there. Maybe one last little bold prediction as you've kind of, you know, stewed on some things after you did your seventh round mock, you sicko. But any one last thing you kind of want to throw out there?
And this is something that we've talked about before, but Chase Bisontis getting into the first round and that second guard, ninth offensive lineman. I just think we're going to see a run on those guys in the first round. And I think there's a good chance that, knowing how some teams feel about Bisontis, like as early as what, 22 in the Chargers, we got to be on the watch for maybe that's the direction they could go. I think there's offensive linemen, there's such a need for it around the league, and Bisontas has enough fans where I do think he gets in there.
And my dad had him as his guard one over Ione.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The same tier, but he had him. He loved him. And I like him a lot too. I had him in my 30s on my final mock, or my final big board, like 38.
Wish he was a little bit longer, right? I mean, there's things you can nitpick. And
just
because
he's guard only, that dings guys for me. If they're just a one position guy, you know, that kind of dings him a little. But yeah, just a little longer, some sustained stuff. But he can really bend. Like that was what was really stood out, like as far as how he can adjust and like kind of, you know, like a power clean, you know, kind of like really adjust his body under that. Yeah, I'm not shocked if he goes round one. And also the teams that need guards at the end of the first, like imagine him with the Seahawks, you know, at 32, they can go a lot of directions, but like that's a spot. Like, yeah, there's, I could see a guard needy team liking him more than I think the public right now. He's a cool player. And then Kalen Rutledge, another guy that might, Manuel Pregnon from Oregon. Like there's a kind of like those little group of guys that can kind of bump up.
Yeah, Rutledge, Brandon Thorne favorite, who a guy that's been snapping for teams, and so that versatility, that's something that I think would really jump out to teams. And Brent Key, the head coach, like he's been a longtime offensive line coach, like he's been around a lot of good football players, and he doesn't hesitate to call Rutledge the toughest guy he's ever been around. So that carries some weight when you hear that from him.
He's a George O'Leary guy, and that's the highest compliment that George O'Leary would ever give a player. It wasn't that he was good or he's bad. It's no, he's tough. And that's like, whoa, he loves him. Like, holy crap. I really like Rutledge for like a zone team. I thought he was really good on like backside cutoffs and all that stuff. Like, yeah, the fact that he's doing center stuff has added kind of in my head a little bit of the appeal as well. All right, last question. And this isn't about 2026. Eyes on 2027, Dane. Do you have any couple thoughts on next year's class? Is it as loaded and as the rumors are right now? Should people be watching the University of Texas this season? Where maybe some other quarterbacks, some other positions that might be loaded? I think there's some cool edges, there's some cool receivers, but if you've maybe taken a little side glance at 2027, what are kind of some of your initial thoughts?
Yeah, and I will have the 2027 mock, just like you, right after the draft.
I know, I'm already working on it.
Right, exactly. Just kind of peeking, you know, just kind of checking these guys out.
Yep.
I obviously Texas is going to be a big team to watch for obvious reasons, but getting Cam Coleman for the Longhorns at receiver, that's massive. It's going to be a Jeremiah Smith. You're the guy. But at some point, because we're so like, all right, Jeremiah Smith's the guy, at some point we're going to get there where it's like, is Cam Coleman better? Like, I promise you, it'll because we get so tired of just talking about Jeremiah Smith all the time. And look, Jeremiah Smith might be the best player in the draft, period, next year. But Cam Coleman is good enough where someone, not saying I'll do it, but someone out there might at least throw it out there that, I don't know, Cam Coleman, a little bigger, like there's some size to him. That'll be put out there. But sticking with Texas, I was so impressed with Trevor Goosby at left tackle.
Yeah.
Yep. The way he improved, like went into this draft class, if he declared, we're talking about him as a first round player, another first round tackle in this class.
Agreed.
He goes back. I know his brother signed with Texas, the basketball team. And so I think that played in his decision to go back. But if he takes that another jump, like he did last year on last year's tape, I mean, Texas is going to be loaded with first round picks, especially on offense next year.
And then Colin Simmons, the edge they have on defense, too.
Exactly.
Freaky.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's Arch Manning and Cam Coleman and Goosby and Colin Simmons. I mean, that might be four of the top, you know, 15 players in next year's draft.
Yeah. I'd lean that way as well. Yeah. And you got Leonard Moore from Notre Dame, a fun corner. He's got top 10 upside too. He's awesome. Yep. Guys that I had in my top 30 before they went back, Amari Washington from Oregon.
Yep.
Defensive tackle. Like, that's just a name there. And his teammate, I always want to say ukulele, Mateo Ugalele. Right. You got Tredez Green, the tight end from LSU, who's a If you watch any Garrett Nussmeier, it's hard to not notice number 14 towering over everybody and actually pretty massive. Fluid as well. Massive. Actually, yeah. Oh, you played basketball? No kidding. are there any other quarterbacks that maybe people should note as, because that's always the main question, but are there some other guys that maybe you have maybe on your short list? You don't have to say, oh, this guy's a first round, this is gonna be top, but maybe just on your short list as you get into this kind of watch period.
I mean, obviously, Dante Moore, what does he do in year two as a starter at Oregon? Likely would have been the number two pick in this draft. So just how does he, avoid that slump and avoid that step back? And how does he build on what he did last year? I think that'll be something to watch. And then Brandon Sorsby, going from Cincinnati to Texas Tech. There's a lot of talent there. He's still learning how to be a more complete quarterback, but talent wise, there's so much to work with. And like, just talking to his quarterback coach and understanding what they're working on and what they're like, there's a lot of talent that I think will eventually make him a first round pick. And so very eager to see how that plays out for the Red Raiders. And then I can't wait to see Lenore Sellers and just what does that look like? I think we were both excited for going into last year, what he could do. And a big part of it was a supporting cast, but there's plenty of blame to go around, him included. So what does it look like? What does the coaching staff do to put the quarterback in better positions to succeed? And then throw out one more. Darian Mensah. I'm just interested to see what it looks like. Obviously, Miami, they've been in the free agent market when it comes to quarterbacks. They went with Cam Ward, and he became the number one overall pick. Carson Beck. He'll be drafted somewhere in that third to fifth round next week. Mensah, I think if he were to declare in this draft, he's probably a third round pick, probably in that quarterback three discussion in this draft. But with the talent around him at Miami,
that's all I have him graded too.
Yeah, how high can he take it? Can he get into the first round? Can he? I'm just really interested to see how that plays out.
Same. I mean, when his first year at Tulane, he was instantly on my radar. And I was like, oh, okay. Right. All right. Noted. And then it was kind of, some of his deep ball kind of dies on him. But I actually thought watching Duke again, just kind of skimming him, I was like, oh, okay. You kind of, it looked better at Duke than it did at Tulane. I would say that. So maybe I like him a little more than even I initially thought. Throws a pretty ball. No shout out Byron Brown at Auburn. Talk about throwing motions.
Yeah.
That thing comes down from his ankle, but I love him. I love Byron Brown. Like I had a 6'5", third round grade on him.
240 and a monster arm. Like there's so much talent there. I'm very eager to see what it looks like. Right. I mean, same. Just jump up in competition. What does it look like? Can he be more consistent? Theoretically, of better receivers to throw to. Another SEC guy, Trinidad Chambliss. What does that look like in year two as a starter for Ole Miss? A guy that all along the whole season, I knew he wanted to go back to school, so I didn't seriously scout him. But then during the playoff, I was just blown away by this guy is doing some things now. I mean, I'm keeping an open mind on Chambliss going into next year.
He went from, oh, you're fun to, oh, you're real. That was the kind of what I had watching him. I was like, oh, he's fun. I watched some Ole Miss through the year. And then same thing, playoffs happen, late season games. I'm actually watching. And it was like, oh my God, you're like you throw the ball better than Dart.
You're doing stuff.
You're not as freaky. Right. It was like, you do some quarterback stuff back there. I know you're not very big. That's where I threw out the Jeff Garcia comparison for him. Cause I was like, I don't know. This guy looks like something I know. Dane, you're the best. I know this. Can't help ourselves and look at next year as well. There's some other cool quarterbacks. Drake Lindsey from Minnesota is interesting. Jaden Maivia, USC. Sane from Ohio State. He's a day three guy to me right now. Same with Sam Levitt. But I'm glad you brought up Sorsby because he kind of has that new way of how guys throw where they torque the hip and then throw. And a lot of those guys, they sometimes have to learn, okay, translate that drill to real games when it's not a perfect pocket. And some guys do, but it's sometimes that it's like, okay, that drill work is not carrying over to the muckiness. So I'm curious, but sometimes it's just reps. So I'm glad you gave him a shout out because I kind of had a day two grade on him, but he has talent. Like he can roll and he can chuck that pigskin. So Dane, you're the best. I appreciate you joining me. Everyone, please make sure you check out The Beast. All 500,000 words, War and Peace levels. How many pages we're at?
627. So yeah, it's quite a few. Just yeah, make sure you have it by your side when you're watching Nate on one screen, me on the other. All night of the draft, second night of the draft. I miss doing it with you, man. One of these days we'll have to get the band back together and do it again. But for the time being, yeah, this was fun.
This was fun. Yeah, I know. The crossover episode or something of that sort. No, I miss doing it with you, man. That's always some fun stuff. Going back to the Cole Strange pick with Patriots. That was maybe one of the first reactions back when they told us how trades were happening because a producer just wrote something on a whiteboard and held it up to us as because we couldn't hear anything in our first year together.
Oh, man.
An Airbnb in Vegas.
I enjoyed it. That was great. I'll do that again. Sign me up.
It's the best. I know. It's my favorite stuff. But no, please, please, everybody check out The Beast. Check out everything that Dane does at The Athletic with those guys, with Robert, Derek, Dave. They kill it over there. They got their draft show coming out. It's great. Happening next week as well. You know, like Dane said, you know, check out both of us. You know, you can do that. You can give us two views. But coming up after the break, I sit down with Carnell Tate, receiver from Ohio State, for a very fun conversation. Stay tuned for that. All right. Hey, guys. Nate here, joined by Carnell Tate, receiver from Ohio State. I promise I'm not trying to rhyme all that. Here on behalf of Snickers, Carnell, thanks for joining me. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing great. No, you just told me right before we hopped on was that you're traveling from hotel to hotel, top 30 visits. How many have you taken so far?
I've taken, I believe, five so far, and I have two more.
Five so far?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Can you share with me what those teams are? I know they're publicly announced, so you're not hiding any information.
There you go. I've been to Cleveland. I've been to Kansas City. I've been to Baltimore. I've been to Tennessee. I've been to New Orleans. And then I have the Giants and I have the Commanders coming up.
I don't know if you know this, but that's a lot of teams that are up there in first round, Carnell. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
No, but I know how that goes. You're a lot of visits, meeting a lot of people, a lot of personnel guys, a lot of coaches and everything. But I just want to talk to you a little about what you did at Ohio State. I really enjoyed your time there, even going into the season. I was curious about what the leap that you could take. And I would say the first thing, even scouting you and watching you, and the thing that your best attribute is your ball skills. You have gigantic hands. Mm-hmm. I think you have a knack for sideline catches.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Where does that come from? Have you always been good with the hand-eye coordination? Were you like, as a kid at recess, you're like, hey, let's do all these sideline catches on the sidewalk? Where did that come from? How'd you work on that?
It was always been a work in progress. I didn't always have the bestest hands growing up, especially 707. Starting on 707, I'll say one tournament, I almost dropped more balls than I caught. So then from there, it was just a work in progress of just repeatedly working your hands, catching footballs, as many footballs as you can. And then the field awareness just speaks for itself. I mean, it was worked on the practice, Coach Hartline. We had this drill with like sideline catches where you're running full speed at the sideline and he just throwing you a ball. It could be a good ball, it could be an ugly ball, and you just got to make sure you get 2 feet in.
Yeah, 2 feet, NFL.
Yeah.
2 feet, not 1 foot.
Yeah. So, that's what's – so this whole thing was preaching to make sure guys are ready when Sunday comes, not Saturday. So you go out there, get 1 foot. And he's like, it's good on Saturday, but they ain't good on Sunday. So he'll make you go out there and do it again.
I love to hear that. Actually, you've had so many teammates at Ohio State and probably another teammate that's going to go to the NFL along with you.
Yeah.
It's a great factory, whatever you want to call it there. It's been really cool to watch all these players coming out of Ohio State. Have any come back, any of your former teammates or even guys before you come back? Have you learned from them, maybe their experience in the NFL when they made that transition?
Ultimately, I think I've learned from all the guys during my time there. Like, I was fortunate enough to play alongside Emeka and then also Marvin, his Belenikov year, he was off the charts in terms of his work capacity, his work ability, and also just things he went out there and put on tape and film. He's at the top of college. So I was just able to just learn from him, teach from him, like whether his release, he'll get a release and work it. So I'll just take from his game. Then even Emeka was a very intelligent person off the field. So he understood the game at the highest level and at the next level. So just being able to learn from him during my time there, I was able to take things from both of those guys. And then as far as in terms of now for Emeka, I talked to Emeka more than I talked to anybody else because Emeka was there. I played with Emeka 2 years. So me and Emeka just have a stronger connection. and a better relationship than the other guys.
No, that's great to hear. That's a great guy to learn from. I was a big fan of his game and his intelligence level. I think it emulates with you as well when I watch you. Is there a non-Ohio State player that maybe you emulated or you want to emulate with your game or that you just like to watch and learn from in the NFL? It might have been from when you were a kid or even now in high school and college.
Yeah. So I grew up watching Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, okay. and then also Davante Adams. So I try to, as terms of now in today's game, I watched Davante Adams tons. I watched Justin Jefferson, Calvin Ridley, and then also Stephon Diggs. I think all those guys are elite route runners. And then Davante, his game speaks for itself, elite route running, and then also his elite releases at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Were you a Bears fan growing up?
Oh, yeah, got to. My dad was a huge Bears fan, so that was the only thing that was on Sundays in the house.
Okay.
You got looked at crazy rooting against the Bears.
Yeah, I know, especially in Chicago. It's a great sports town. And I really do think that it was really cool to watch this year. I think you maybe got asked to do a little bit more, maybe just because of what you had around you before. It's a good thing. You guys had so much talent. So you got to really highlight your game and your skill set more. It's truly really fun to watch. Did you have a favorite run to route or one that maybe wasn't your favorite, but now that you kind of got to ask to do it more at Ohio State that you're like, man, I like to do this. Was it the over route, something, you know, corners? You ran a lot of posts, it seems like as well, which I laugh at when everyone talks about your 40. I'm like, well, I got a lot of tape that sees him burning a lot of guys down the field. Yeah. Is there something that you're like, yeah, this was my kind of go-to route that I really like to do?
Oh, like I said, my go-to route is probably just running deep down the field. Like you see from this faster, I was able to run past defenders, get them to open that one-way crossface. So, yeah, I think that was probably my go-to route this season. And that was asked for me this past season, go stretch the field, go win down the field.
I love it. I know it's all about explosives. Yeah. Who's the hardest corner that you played against in college?
Like I said, this a lot. It's hard to say who the hardest player I played against because, like, personally, a lot of teams doesn't really play man coverage against us.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's hard. So
especially in college.
Yeah, definitely hard, yeah. But, like, I'd say, like, overall person that, like, I watched the film was probably D'Angelo. I mean, he's a small guy, but he plays bigger in your way. He actually is always around the ball, transitions well. And then also the defense that he was in allowed him to thrive and make those plays.
Jumping everything. Was he a talker?
Not really.
Yeah, I get that with college guys because I watch and they do a lot of talking and I'm like, you guys weren't in man there.
Yeah,
I don't know why you guys are talking. What do you think about DBs celebrating maybe an overthrow sometimes?
I find it crazy. It's like, yeah, you didn't do
that. I did too.
I mean, because like for a DB, you only need one you need one thing to happen for you to like be feeling good. Like you said, as a receiver, you got to rely on the line of scrimmage. You got to rely on the ball getting to the quarterback. You got to rely on the quarterback actually throwing a good ball. So like, it's a lot in terms of you got to rely on to actually go out there, be capable of making the play and getting a chance at the play. So yeah. So one of those things can happen wrong and the DB can celebrate. Then it's just like, all right.
We gotta go. Really gonna do that? I mentioned too, you're like you're doing the top 30s now. You're traveling around. What have you been working on training wise as something that you maybe want to enter the NFL into mini camp to OTAs? That's off season training, by the way. To OTAs is their version of spring ball. What do you want to like bring to the table that like you maybe want to hone in or maybe was there an NFL team that maybe said something in one of these visits or in these interviews that you're like, oh, that's interesting. I should maybe start working on that and polishing it up.
I don't know. I think like we always say, like probably the biggest thing is just probably winning at the line of scrimmage. I mean, you have to be able to do that in the NFL level, winning at the line of scrimmage. So that's probably the biggest thing I've been working on this offseason, just releases. And also just cleaning up my route running ability, transitioning smoother, quicker.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about details and everything, too.
Yes, sir.
I always ask this for the guys, why number 17?
So I play freshman ball. So during the time, they just like, you get in line. They let certain guys pick, but I wasn't familiar with the coaches, and I was new. I was a new kid from around. So they just threw me a jersey number. The one of the coaches who actually liked me and I actually had a good relationship with him, I told him, like, coach, I ain't messing with this number. My initial number was, I believe, 86 or 84, okay. Like somewhere in the 80s. And I'm like, coach, I ain't messing with this number. So he like, next person he signed, the closest next player to him, he just took his jersey, switched with me, 17. Ever since then, I've just been riding with it. And then it's also something I never had to argue with nobody about. Like, everyone always wants single digits, numbers 11. So I'm just like, all right, I'll just take my number and I ain't got to argue with nobody.
That's smart. Yeah. I don't know if you golf, but this is why I play yellow golf balls. It's not because of how I see it or anything. Yeah. It's just that when three balls are out there, usually not in the fairway, in the rough, I just want to know which ball is mine. Yeah, that's exactly. It. That's the only reason I play yellow golf balls. I don't have to battle with anybody else.
I'll probably play those. You see where my ball went. So I'm
just to play. All right. Are you lefty or a righty?
I'm a righty. So actually, when I first started golf, I was a lefty. And then I switched over to go blast our player, right? Yeah.
How'd you not figure that out? Did you play baseball at all growing up?
No, I never played baseball. So I was actually left-handed until my dad made me go right-handed. Because they say he didn't know how to teach a left-handed kid. So he forced me to go back right-handed. So there's times I still use my left-handed things. In the golf, I was able to. So when I first started golf, I tried to go swing right-handed and I couldn't hit the ball for nothing. So then I went left-handed. I was able to make contact with the ball and everything. But then they were like, "Nah, you can't be lefty. You gotta go back right." So I was forced to go back right.
You can be a lefty.
Yeah,
you're a switch hitting golfer. Yeah. So do you throw naturally righty or lefty?
No, I throw naturally righty.
Okay, naturally righty. Yeah. Okay, I have a theory about pass catchers being left-handed. So I thought I caught another one here, and I was all excited. The golf. You could be a lefty in golfing. That makes so. My parents did the same thing. I did a lot of things lefty, and my mom. She was like, "All right, pick a hand." And I was like, "What are you?" And she's like, "Right-handed." I'm like, "Okay, I'm right-handed." And my wife now was like, "You were actually probably left-handed, and you probably screwed your whole college career up."
Yeah, that's another thing. Yep.
You didn't. I did. No. So the other thing too, I noticed this, and just looking in your background too, the 7 on, you mentioned this, your 7-on-7 team. This might have been a different team, but the one that you ended on, at least in high school, pretty loaded.
Yeah.
Could you mention some of the names that were on your 7-on-7 football team in high school?
Let's go. So on the offensive side of the ball. We had Brandon Ennis, who's my teammate at Ohio State.
Yep.
We actually had Makai Lemon for OT7. Yep. We had Malachi Nelson, who's highly rated. We had Ray Ray Jones. We had Malachi for attorney, Malachi Tony. We had JJ for attorney as well. So yeah, we got a bunch of players.
Yeah, 5-star mercenaries coming in and everything. Yeah. No, that's awesome. No, Carnell, this was awesome. I really appreciate it. Best of luck wherever you end up. I'm very excited to see kind of how your kind of game continues to grow. Is there anything too that you're looking forward to in the NFL? Like something that maybe you've learned in this process, you're like, "Oh, I didn't think about that. Like, I didn't think about that aspect of the NFL life." I know you're not there. We're still 2 weeks away, but something that you're excited about maybe with the NFL jump.
I'm just excited to go out there and play at the highest level and then also play against players you watched growing up and then also play along those players you watched growing up. So yeah, I'm just excited for it all and just soaking it all in.
Yeah. Any players are you excited to play with or against?
Like I said, Devontae, I'm excited to play with all my fellow Ohio State buddies. And then also even the ones I didn't get a chance. 500
of you guys, that's why.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then also the ones I wasn't able to play with. And then tons of elite receivers in the league, like Jamar, T, Stephon. So yeah, all those good guys, getting the chance to meet them as well.
That's awesome. No, best of luck. You're a heck of a player. Really fun to watch. And I'm really excited to see you make this jump to the NFL. So
thank you. I appreciate talking
with you.
Yes, sir. Yep. Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your 50 visits that you have have lined up. But hopefully you get some training and get some rest soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. We are closing it out today. I'll be back on Tuesday with Matt and Charles for our kind of final thoughts. Our little breaking the glass on the ship. That is the 2026 NFL draft. We also have our draft show next week. Hinted at with Dane. Make sure to check that out next Thursday. It'll be me, Matt, Charles, Andrew Siciliano on Thursday, Jason Fitz on Friday, all of our great reporters, Jory, Charles Robinson. It will be a ton of fun. We go pick to pick. We'll have analysis. We'll have reactions, all that great stuff. So please make sure to tune in for that draft show. It's one of my favorite things. Like Dane and I talked about, it really is one of my favorite nights of the entire year. Favorite couple nights, I should say. So please join us as we, shrug our shoulders at some picks, cheer for some picks. act like we have something important to say. It'll be a ton of fun. But I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. Thanks to Dane and Carnell for joining me today. They are the best, both of them, seriously, two Ohio guys. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us wherever you get your podcasts, or watch us on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel, Make sure to like and subscribe there as well. Thanks to Stone, Austin, Madison, behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Have a great weekend. Thank you all for listening. It's draft week next week. Get ready. See you guys next time.